This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, speaking with colleagues Alan Howard, Daniel Nussbaum, and Brenda Schaefer of the Naval Postgraduate School. Their new volume, which is a teaching volume for professionals in the military and those attached through the U.S. government about operational energy here in the 21st century. There are many historical examples, and there are contemporary examples, the war in Ukraine, for example. However, we're going to look to the future. And the future involves taking into account the energy expenditure of the services. Brenda, I begin with you because what is striking to me, I never seen it written down, is the extreme disparity between the services and energy demand consistent from the chart that you provide since fiscal year 2014. The Army is needful. You know, they boast about their big tanks that it's not miles per gallon, it's gallons per mile. But the overwhelming demand is by the U.S. Air Force. Did that surprise you, Brenda, when you saw those numbers, that it's more than all the rest of them combined?
Right. The fact that it's so disproportional, yes, that did surprise me. But if we think of modern warfare, and even in between, you know, the real battles, right, the ships and the air forces are constantly in maneuvers. They're constantly deployed around the world. And if we think of what's the demand of the United States in military today, to be in a short time over vast distances, potentially with adverse weather, and now we can even imagine being deployed in two or more places at the same time. You know, really only the Navy and the Air Force can deliver that kind of power. But also think of the energy needs that requires, not only in quantity but in very specific types of forces, and as many different U.S. administrations, they frequently talk about this idea of pivot to Asia. Well, you really can't pivot away from Europe and the Middle East because it'll never allow you to pivot away. But if they mean preparing for confrontation in Asia, from an energy perspective, especially from an operational energy perspective, the U.S. will not have the kind of conditions that it's been used to in Europe. You know, so Europe, you have, you know, allies that have dedicated energy available to the United States. You have the Central European pipeline system where you have stored energy. You don't have those same infrastructure and allied conditions in Asia. And also because most of the U.S. allies are islands, they can't share energy supplies among themselves. So we will have a lot, from an energy perspective, we will have a lot more challenges conducting warfare in Asia than in Europe.
Dan, I come to you because there's a matter that we did not cover initially in our remarks that I think the answer to why I didn't attend to it, the difference between renewable energy and fossil fuel energy. Fossil fuel energy is out of favor in the best supper clubs in New York. However, we must discuss it because it's the nature of warfare that it needs the high end, the best we've got, and that would be fossil fuel. The fossil fuel demands by the U.S. military are endless. This no longer involves making a green transition or dealing with the cost of energy at Army bases and Air Force bases. This is about getting fuel to the sharp end of the stick. And now that I'm obliged to think the way you three have written this book, it seems to me that we've got a situation where we need energy resources in all directions on the islands of the Pacific, on our allies, Japan, South Korea, Australia, and the Philippines. We need to spread things out. Is that underway, Dan, to your understanding?
Well, I need to step back, John, because 80% of the fuel used, the energy used in the Department of Defense is this tactical stuff, ships, aircraft, vehicles. 20% is installations. On the installation, I can imagine putting solar panels and whatnot to power the dormitories, the cooking facilities. But when you get out into the fleet and you ask, what do we power our platforms with? The answer currently is fossil fuels. Ah, but what about the next generation? Well, that means looking at what's in R&D. What's in R&D is all fossil fuel powered. And since an aircraft carrier lasts from design to disposal about 100 years, I see no end to the demand on fossil fuels from the large energy consumers in the Department of Defense. So if that's true, how are we going to supply and resupply the Indo-Pacific area of responsibility? That is an ongoing topic because it's difficult. By the way, it was difficult in World War I when the Allies relied on California oil to run to run the Allies. So it's always a problem of getting fuel to the front. It's easier if the fight is in your backyard, as the Russians have right now. They have interior lines of control. But the issue of storage, supply is a serious issue. Typically, in peacetime, you fairy dust that issue. You say, oh, the logisticians will handle it. They are magicians at this. Don't worry, it'll be there. In wartime, it isn't so. And so one really needs to think about how you supply, how you resupply, how you pre-store things in potential areas of conflict.
Alan, I come to you, Alan. Oh, go ahead. Oh, sorry, Brenda.
John, if I could add a second side of operational energy that, you know, traditionally, and you saw this frequently in World War I, World War II, there's two sides of operational energy. It's providing the energy for your own operations, but disrupting the energy of your adversaries. And I think in U.S. thinking, Western thinking in general, we're not paying enough attention to the other side of the disruptions of energy to the adversaries. We see this in Ukraine with the Washington holding Ukraine back from attacking Russian energy because they want the energy to flow to global markets. You see this in the case of Israel-Gaza, where Israel not only is held back from the U.S. from disrupting energy supplies to Hamas, actually has to provide it themselves. So it's kind of like, you know, during World War II, if we said, well, the German population is freezing, we got to provide energy to them while we're fighting the Nazis, that would be a pretty hard, you know, war to fight. So we don't think enough about the other side, which is disrupting energy to U.S. adversaries.
I come to something I didn't know exist, Alan. Red Hill in Hawaii, a storage facility that's now been closed by order of the Department of Defense since 2022. That was an enormous bank of energy for emergencies or war fighting, and it's no longer there. What is the thinking about replacing it? Are we going to use Australia? Are we going to use the Philippines? How do you get the fuel to the fighters?
That's a really great question, John. And I think it's one that we're struggling with in the military. And one of the reasons why this book and the thinking that we're trying to proliferate is so important, because I think I talk a lot about, when I give lectures, the folks who are making policies have the world that we wish we lived in, but it's in great conflict to the world that we actually live in. And a point that Dan raised a second ago, which is the lifetime of our military operational platforms, cannot be understated. I mean, these weapons platforms, we're talking ships, planes, et cetera, they're in use for 4 to 5 decades. And it takes even, you know, 1 to 2 decades sometimes to design, develop, and then build and field them. So all of the systems that we currently use fossil fuels, and the ones that are going to replace those are going to use fossil fuels. And so when decisions are made, like to close Red Hill, we are really going to have a problem, because the biggest challenge we have now is supplying fuel to the forces, in particular in the Pacific AOR, because you have these massive distances, as Brenda pointed out, not the same. In fact, very, very different than fighting in a European theater, where you have land and infrastructure. You can go to the gas station if you need to. Those things don't exist in the Pacific theater. So we have to solve this problem. It's not solved yet. And this is a really big challenge.
I'd like to add one thing, yes, that not only are the new systems coming online to follow up with the legacy systems, fossil fuel powered, but they're more energy intensive than the legacy systems.
So what we have here is an unfinished story. And you're educating the military, the uniforms, that this is not going to go well until these details are attended to. Now, I've been talking romantically about kinetic warfare. When we come back, there's another kind practice these days, and you offer examples in it about how dangerous it can be, cyber attacks on the energy infrastructure. Brenda Schaefer, Alan Howard, Daniel Nussbaum. The book is Operational Energy. This is a textbook for pros, many of whom wear uniforms, but it's something to educate yourself about the challenge of taking on an adversary who gets to play on his home court. That would be the People's Republic of China.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.